Mics are live.
Good morning. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:02 a.m. on Tuesday, December 3rd, 2019. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Randy Christman. I have one insignificant announcement to start the meeting because I just never knew there was such a thing when I was driving to work this morning. And it's National Green Bean Casserole Day. So I thought, so apparently that's a thing for those of you following the green bean industry. Or so I guess that's short for I really don't have any solid opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchek.
I don't have any opening comments either, but I'm so happy to know that. It seems like it's a little off. It should almost be the same day as Thanksgiving because that's when you eat it.
It's true.
I just threw away the last of it last night because it was soggy and gross. So no one's going to eat it anymore.
It gets better with age.
Oh, no. No.
Commissioner Christman, do you have something productive you can add?
Not all that productive, but maybe I could use that and use green bean casserole to celebrate. This week marks the end of my fifth Lestern in elective office.
And fifth what?
Lestern.
All right. Well, it's a Lestern.
It's a five-year period.
Okay.
It's a quarter of a century.
But you haven't, you didn't start on this day.
Early December. I said this week.
Yeah, but we didn't start, you didn't just start in December. It was January.
No, but I started the end of my fifth Lestern. I started in the Senate in December. Beginning of December of 94.
Oh, okay. A Lestern is a five-year period, and you've had right. Five of them.
Yes.
25 years. If you want to be understood, I would just say 25 years. And you know what? It's kind of momentous, too, so you might want to be understood.
But I saw a rooster, Cogburn, over the weekend, and that reminded me of that word.
Oh. Oh. Well, that... Congratulations.
Okay, moving right along.
Moving right along. We have two items on consent in the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. Moving into the regular agenda, my first item, I move the Commission adopt the Order on Consent Agreement and Public Service Commission Diamond Willow Energy LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-18-199.
Second.
On June 8th, the Commission received of 2018, the Commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Arrow Pipeline alleging a violation by Diamond Willow Energy of North Dakota Century Code Section 49-23-04. And the complaint was revised on June 11th, 2018. A letter was sent to Diamond Willow enclosing the revised one-call complaint, requesting a response by June 27th. And on February 26th, 2019, staff filed a formal complaint requesting that the commission find Diamond Willow in violation of Section 49-23-04. Diamond Willow is located in Newtown, North Dakota, and the violation is that they failed to contact the notification center and provide an excavation notice or location notice before beginning an excavation. And as a result of the excavation that took place, damage was caused by Diamond Willow's equipment to Arrow's 8-inch natural gas and also 6-inch crude oil pipelines. The cost to repair the coating on Arrow's pipelines was approximately $70,000, almost $71,000. And that's a protective coating that is put on the pipes in order to ensure that they maintain integrity, their integrity while being placed underground or when located underground, it essentially prevents that they would deteriorate over time. So that protective coating is incredibly important. Diamond Willow and staff engaged in good faith settlement discussions, resulting in a consent agreement intended to avoid further administrative proceedings or litigation. And as a result of that, Diamond Willow agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $4,600 that would be payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 business days of an order approving or accepting the consent agreement. And just a couple other notes on this. They were a first-time offender. Staff did note that they were very good to work with. Which is always very helpful. So I think it results without question in a better understanding of the North Dakota One Call law and why it's so important that excavators that are operating in North Dakota follow those laws. So I said this many times, but it goes back to safety. And in this case, the natural gas line, of course, would, if that is punctured, poses a great risk from a safety standpoint. Crude oil pipelines can also pose a safety risk, but then you have the other side of that, which is the environmental concern from a spill or a leak. So it's really important, and the one thing that is so critical in this is that when something like this occurs and it's caught, it can be remedied. The concern, though, is when these types of events take place, they occur, then the ground is replaced, and there might be long-lasting damage that down the road, whether it's a decade from now or 2 decades from now, could result in a leak or a spill. So you just don't know until you get further down the road, and we don't want to be looking back at incidents that occurred that weren't caught. So in this case, it's a good ending. The damage was detected and corrected.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just one additional point to make on this one, and that is that while they are being assessed a civil penalty of $4,600, they also had to pay the $70,000, almost $71,000, to repair the damage on the pipe that they struck. So this gets to be a really costly problem for companies who just don't take the extra step, plan ahead a little bit, and do the proper notification and careful digging. So really, it's not a way to save time or money if you think you're going to skip out on the one-call requirements.
Correct, and well, we don't have jurisdiction in terms of ensuring that the facility is repaired. That's a great point. The companies are liable for that damage and making sure it's repaired properly. So it's punitive in terms of the fine that we assess to the company, but it's also punitive in terms of the cost that the company incurs to repair the facility. So that's a really good point.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, the second item, I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Public Service Commission, KPH Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-18-412. In Public Service Commission, KPH Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-19-413. In Public Service Commission, KPH Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-18-414. In Public Service Commission, KPH Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-18-415. In Public Service Commission, KPH Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-18-416. In Public Service Commission, KPH Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-18-417. And in Public Service Commission, KPH Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-18-418.
Second.
On December 4th, which will be familiar because we had several damage prevention enforcement cases submitted by Xcel Energy also on December 4th, and they tend to, Excel does anyway, to batch their complaints. And I believe it was either 19 or 21. So this would be within that group that were submitted on December 4th of 2018. In this case, we received 7 North Dakota One Call complaints from Excel related to violations, alleged violations by KPH Incorporated. And we sent letters to KPH enclosing the complaints. KPH did send a response addressing each North Dakota One Call complaint back to the commission. And then advocacy staff filed seven formal complaints against KPH in the above captioned cases that I referred to. On October 22nd, 2019, the commission found each of the 7 formal complaints stated a prima facie case, and the commission served KPH with those complaints. A consent agreement between staff and KPH was filed with the commission for resolution of these complaints. And just in terms of the types of complaints or what had happened, this was during street repair in the Fargo area. And as a result of failure to conduct excavation in a careful and prudent manner, KPH hit 6 different 5/8-inch service lines, natural gas lines, 1 2-inch main, and 1 3-phase electric line, all owned by Excel. And what happened in this particular instance, part of the North Dakota One Call law is that you hand dig 24 inches on either side of where the facility is marked. So it might be 3 feet down, it might be 4 feet down. Sometimes because of grading, because of landscaping and other areas, it may not be that deep. So a lot of times what companies are doing, they're potholing and hand digging down in certain locations and then determining the depth of the line, and they'll go over and do the same thing 10, 12, 15 feet over. And then based on that, they will excavate on the top, but that's where the problem occurs, because line depths may vary. And that's not a guarantee that you're going to avoid hitting the facility or a facility that is there, meaning that you do have to hand dig for that stretch of where the excavation is taking place, and not just in spots. That does take time. It takes additional money. It takes people that are actually manually doing the labor. And I understand that, because when you're under contract and you're trying to get a project done on time, you're trying to move fast, you know, safely at the same time, but you're still trying to move quickly. But that is a requirement, and that is something that contractors, excavators in particular, have to take into account when they're doing this. As a result of these line hits, KPH agrees to be assessed a penalty of $7,100, with $6,100 of that payable to the Public Service Commission, again within 10 business days of an order accepting or approving the consent agreement. The remaining $1,000 will be suspended, and on the condition that KPH commit no further violation of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 49-23 within 5 years of the date of the order. This KPH was a first-time offender. They were good to work with. I think they recognize what they need to do going forward. But at the same time, we want to impress upon all companies that safety comes first, and it's just a critical component of making sure that not only people on the site, but whether it's homeowners, business owners in proximity to those facilities, are safe as well. And again, the danger is nicking a line or thinking that everything is okay, and then later finding out that gas has been leaking. That's, again, the greater danger or an equal danger in all of this. So it's just really important that companies follow the North Dakota One Call law, and we will continue to be proactive in that sense, and impressing upon them the need to do so. And we have a lot of really good companies operating in North Dakota. Excavation, of course, we have a short season in the whole scheme of things, but It can occur year-round, but in the summer months particularly. So I just want people to be safe out there.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Northern States Power Company Advance Prudence, 151.2 megawatt Dakota Range 3, application case number PU-18-430.
Second.
On December 27th, 2018, NSP, also known as Excel, filed an application with the North Dakota Public Service Commission seeking an advance determination of prudence under North Dakota Century Code Section 49-05-16 for a power purchase agreement between NSP and Dakota Range 3 LLP for a wind energy conversion facility. Again, that would be 151.2 megawatts. We did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing, and on July 15th, 2019, following that, the public hearing was held as noticed. This particular facility, if constructed, will be placed in service in 2020, and I believe that would be the fourth quarter of 2020. And this is the reason that NSP is procuring the Dakota Range 3 PPA. It's to meet its obligations under an electric service agreement with Honeycrisp Power, which is a subsidiary of Google, to provide electric service to Google's proposed data center to be located at NSP's Sherburn County Generation Station property in Becker, Minnesota. The proposed Google data center has the potential to be the largest customer on the NSP system. NSP testified that Dakota Range 3 produces $22 million in savings. Advocacy staff did their own calculations and actually came up with a range in the $31 to $48 million range in terms of overall savings. In light of NSP's and advocacy staff's economic analysis, advocacy testified that it recommends the commission approve the ADP for Dakota Range 3 PPA with two conditions. One, a requirement that North Dakota customers receive financial compensation for their share of renewable energy credits associated with the project, and a requirement that North Dakota customers be held harmless for any RECs that any NSP may have to purchase to satisfy its commitment under the Google ESA. So this is a business-to-business agreement, transaction, if you will, between NSP and the subsidiary of Google. They've entered in, or they're trying to move this agreement forward, and of course would have to have the PPA in place to do that. And one thing that you know, we talk in this instance, I've talked about NSP and I've talked about Honeycrisp, also known as Google or a part of Google. So we talk about the two companies creating a transaction, but one thing that always is occurring as a part of this, there's always a landowner or landowners behind these projects that are also working out agreements with not NSP in this case, but the owner of the facility. So these always, not always, but quite often they trace back to, well, always, you know, if a facility is being constructed, to a private landowner or landowners. And it's important that we recognize that they also oftentimes are farmers, ranchers, whomever, that are looking to supplement their income. So that becomes a part of it as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just say, make a couple comments on this. First of all, it's beneficial to North Dakota customers in a couple of ways. One being, if the proposed data center for Google comes to fruition, they are a potential huge power user. You heard Brian say could be the largest customer on the XL system. And so being such a large user, that really reduces North Dakotans' share of the cost of the system as a whole, and so that will save customers money. And so that's a good thing anytime you get a big industrial customer, and if Minnesota is increasing its share or its percentage of the system, that reduces ours, and that's good for our customers. And secondly, the cost of this energy is low, and it advocacy staff and the company have both agreed that it should displace higher cost energy that the customers are paying for. So I think those are the two benefits that make this ADP sensible at this point. I would also just like to make a comment that this really illustrates another opportunity for North Dakota, I believe, and that is in this whole data center market. We have low data centers need low energy. They use low energy prices. They use a ton of power, and we have some of the lowest energy prices in the country. And so we should be a great home for these types of projects. And additionally, a lot of them are looking for green energy, and North Dakota has the best wind resource in the country. And so we should really be a great market for these, and I'd love to see Xcel pursuing this type of a project in its market in Grand Forks or Fargo, which also has the kind of the tech employees that this kind of a data center would also require. So I'm hoping that this represents a new focus for the company, and that they'll be looking at North Dakota as well for future projects of this nature.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, Electric Service Agreement, American Colloid Company, approval case number PU-18-433.
Second.
On December 28, 2018, MDU filed for commission approval a negotiated service agreement with American Colloid Company for interruptible industrial electric service at ACC's North Dakota facility. On November 15th, 2019, MDU did file a restated electric service agreement with ACC. The issues to be considered in this matter are whether the restated electric service agreement is just and reasonable and should be approved. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reason for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by January 10th, 2020. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And for more information on this, as always, you can contact the Public Service Commission at 701-328-2400.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, my final item. I move the commission reduce the filing fee to $10,000, suspend the tariff and rates, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in MDU Resources, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Generation Resource Cost Recovery, Tariff and Rates, case number PU-19-364.
Second.
On November 8th, 2019, MDU filed a change to its generation resource recovery rate tariff to reflect 2020 projected costs for its Lewis and Clark reciprocating internal combustion engine units. The effect of the rate change on the bill for a residential customer using 894 kilowatt hours per month is a decrease of 0.03 cents per month. Again, the issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether or not the proposed tariff revisions are just and reasonable, do the proposed rates comply with the tariff, and are the proposed rates just and reasonable as well. Those interested, again, can comment on the application in writing, and those desiring a hearing must file a written request, again, identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reason for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by January 17th, 2020.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, that completes my agenda items. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Okay. I move the commission adopt the order in Ashtabula Wind, LLC, Ashtabula Wind Energy Center Repower, citing exclusion certificate, case number PU-19-284.
Second.
So this certificate was first, or permit was first issued in May of 2008 for the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center. In April of 2009, the commission issued an order transferring partial ownership by Otter Tail Power of 48 megawatts of the nameplate capacity of this facility, and the remaining 152 portion retained by Ashtabula. So on July of this year, Ashtabula filed a request stating that it intends to improve the turbines operating this facility by adding new gearboxes and rotors. So they wanted to do that and upgrade the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center portion of this project to 160.4 megawatts. Ashtabula currently owns and operates 99 turbines with a nameplate capacity of 148.5. They propose to improve the 99 turbines by retrofitting the turbines and power system with upgrades based on new technology, extending the life of these turbines by at least 10 years. The upgrades will increase the nameplate capacity to from 1.5 megawatts per turbine to 1.62 megawatts per turbine, and the overall after repowering would be 160.4 megawatts for the entire project. Let's see. They also requested that we omit any designation of the megawatt threshold from the permit, so that would remove the designated capacity threshold for the designated site. What this will do, the rotor height of the turbines will increase by 45 feet. The rotor diameter, I'm sorry, the hub height will remain the same. So the rotor diameter will go from 150 feet to almost 200 feet. The existing turbine locations, towers, electric collection systems, substations, operations and maintenance building, and Met Tower will remain unchanged. Existing roads and temporary workspaces used previously during construction will be used, and the temporary workspaces will be returned to existing land uses. The project construction will occur wholly within the site designated by the commission. Ashtabula conducted a new sound level assessment and completed a shadow flicker assessment. There are four participating receptors that may experience sound levels over 50 dBA, and there are three participating receptors that may experience over 30 hours per year shadow flicker. Ashtabula has obtained waivers from the landowners for all of those potential thresholds that will be exceeded. Let's see. In July, the State Historic Society of North Dakota issued a no significant archaeological or architectural sites affected determination. Another issue with this is the commission's 2008 order predates our current wind facility setbacks. So some of the turbines will not meet the current setback rules once they add the new blades. Ashtabula has obtained a conditional use permit from Barnes County for the improvement activities that will put six turbines into the setback from the center line of a county or maintained township roadway. They've also received a waiver from three turbines that will also not comply with the current setback of 1.1 times the height of the turbine from the property line of a non-participating landowner. So they've received waivers from those landowners. Other than that, the project construction will not affect any other exclusion or avoidance areas. As part of this upgrade, Ashtabula will also be installing lights to enable the future installation of light mitigation technology as approved by the FAA. So having looked at all of those, I think that this, in discussing this pretty extensively at a number of different work sessions, I think that this order is ready to go. The one, the couple of the issues that came up, they started construction prior. They had notified us and had discussions with staff, but they did start construction on these improvements prior to receiving this order. And as the law is written, and as we discussed in a work session last week, the construction that they were doing did not meet the definition of construction under the law. It was actually this type of improvements that they were doing is not part of construction that requires a permit, a formal permit and decision by us. So that was they were in line and properly operating in how they were going about making these upgrades. Secondly, the thing that we had to consider was the impact to the new setbacks that were established after the original permit. And we've determined that this process whereby they received a waiver from those landowners is appropriate, and it's the process that we'll be following moving forward until a time at which maybe a more formal process will be established in our rules. And it is something that we're going to look at in more detail. So I think those were the main issues on this project. And other than that, I think we're ready to go and approve this order for the state's first repowering of a wind farm.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. My second motion, I move the commission adopt the order issuing first reissued certificate of corridor compatibility number 208 and first reissued route permit number 2918 to Emmons Logan Wind Interconnection LLC and Emmons Logan Wind E-Logan Interconnection LLC, transfer of corridor certificate and route permit citing application case number PU-19-333.
Second.
In last February, the commission adopted findings of fact, conclusions, law, and order, issuing a certificate for and route permit for Emmons Logan Wind, designating a corridor and route for the construction operation of a 6.85-mile, 230-kilovolt electric transmission line and associated facilities in Emmons County. On October 3rd, Emmons Logan and Emmons Logan Wind Interconnection filed a joint application for expedited transfer of this certificate from Emmons Logan to Emmons Logan Interconnection. On October 22nd, we issued a notice of hearing and provided till November 22nd for receiving written comments and hearing requests. No comments or requests were received. Emmons Logan and Emmons Logan Interconnection are both wholly owned indirect subsidiaries of NextEra Energy Resources, LLC, which is a wholly owned indirect subsidiary of NextEra Energy, Incorporated. The affidavit of Gregory Schneck, Vice President of Emmons Logan Wind Interconnection, LLC, states that Emmons Logan Wind Interconnection has the financial and technical qualifications to own the transmission facilities, and they agree to assume the rights and obligations of the certificate and route permit. So, having received that and having received no requests or concerns from the public on this or requests for hearings, I think this order is also ready to go.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Julie. Commissioner Christman.
Mr. Chairman, I think we could improve flow if I could have your consent to reorder these and take them in this order, RC 2, 3, 4, 1, 5.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. RC 2, I move the commission adopt the first amended order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Mid-Continent Communications, designated eligible carrier application case number PU-16-48.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
This next one after this, will be about a very similar topic, so I wouldn't intend to repeat everything. So most of this applies to the next one as well. On May 5th, 2016, the Commission issued an order designating Mid-Continent Communications as an eligible telecommunications carrier. After this, I'll refer to that as an ETC, for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers. This designation, like I say, is also known as Lifeline-only ETC designation. And that order covered 29 exchanges throughout North Dakota. Both federal law and state law give the Commission the authority to designate a common carrier as an ETC. On September 6th of this year, Mid-Continent filed a motion to amend the order, requesting that we eliminate certification order number 13, and that is the requirement that they file annually a complete listing of Lifeline customers, including the type of proof required, the type of proof reviewed, the eligibility dates, and a North Dakota Department of Human Services form, SFN 1059. The Department of Human Services recently notified us they are no longer able to provide the verifications to prevent waste, fraud, and abuse in the program. That was the point of us having that certification order. However, the good news is that USAC, the federal organization, has recently implemented new programming for this very same purpose. On October 2nd, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. No comments or requests for a hearing were received. And so one of the requirements for these ETC statuses is that we find it in the public interest. And I think the evidence is clear that the public interest is in the public interest that Mid-Continent be designated as an ETC in the service area requested. And as part of this, the certification relating to order provisions is incorporated and attached to this order, with the exception of paragraph 13. That is that extra requirement I talked about, which is eliminated. And I would also like to point out in the printed version, the preliminary statement, if you go to page 2, the second paragraph, the fifth line from the top, it mentions the fine annually, and it was really to file annually. So staff, I think, can make that typo change. Otherwise, it's as I explained.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
RC3, I move the Commission adopt the first amended order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Mid-Continent Communications designated eligible carrier application case number PU-17-50.
Second.
This is essentially the exact same thing, except for those previous 29 communities. A couple years later, they got another ETC status improvement to add the community of Cooperstown. And so that's a separate case number, and so they did this filing separate. Otherwise, everything the exact same. This just covers Cooperstown as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the Commission approve the decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on November 5th, 2019 in Otter Tail Power Company, 49.5 megawatt Laverne Wind Farm, also known as Ashtabula 1, in Griggs decommissioning plan and cost in case number PU-18-343. I'm sorry, it's Ashtabula 2 that it's also known as.
Second.
On November 5th of 2019, Otter Tail filed with the Commission an updated decommissioning plan, cost estimate, and financial assurances for the Laverne facility, which has a nameplate capacity of 49.5 megawatts and consists of 33 turbines. The purpose of the update was to align the Laverne facilities decommissioning plan and cost estimate with the plans and cost estimates that the commission approved for Langdon Wind and Ashtabula Wind. The current decommissioning cost estimate for Laverne, excluding salvage, totals $7.326 million, or if you averaged it out, $222,000 per turbine. That's always a dangerous number because that includes things such as roads that aren't necessarily consistent, but it's just a convenient way, I think, of looking at it. Staff is in the process of working with Otter Tail and developing a decommissioning financial assurance that would be acceptable to the commission. Staff has reviewed the decommissioning plan, though, and cost estimate for the Laverne facility and believes both are reasonable. I'm going to kind of jump ahead and point out, and this is the reason I wanted these back-to-back, especially if you compare that cost per turbine, there's not a lot of consistency with these decommissioning plans. And our rules, when we established this requirement, in order to make them credible decommissioning plans, we required that these companies use a licensed engineer, a North Dakota licensed engineer. This isn't just someone they're finding off the street. All three of these you're going to see are from credible large engineering firms, but they vary wildly in these numbers. And I guess if we have a immediate problem with that, we should probably reject all these and go to the drawing board and try and figure out how we get to the bottom of that. I don't think that that's necessary at this point. You know, these are all relatively new as far as their lifespan. Decommissioning plans will have to be filed now, then after their first 10 years of operation, and every 5 years after that. And so my own opinion is we get these up front. We're going to learn a lot when we are able to have them all in front of us and compare and contrast. And then we might see weaknesses from a certain company, a certain engineering firm, or something like that. And I think we can correct it as we go. But at this point, I wanted to be clear that there is that big discrepancy in how they're evaluating these. But I don't think we have adequate information to say that one as opposed to the other is unreasonable. So I hope we can support these all, but at this point, starting with this one. This is on the high end of the range, by the way.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would agree with Commissioner Christman's comments. Add just a few things along the same line, and that is I don't believe that some of the cost estimates that we're seeing are realistic. I think they're too low, but I also think it's prudent to take these as they are submitted currently, because we do have the opportunity to call companies back at any time if we want to see revised numbers, rather than just waiting for the 5-year requirement to submit new plans. And I think I look at this as round one. The first phase of decommissioning cost estimates that we're seeing from various companies. With that said, I think Otter Tail was very detailed and I believe more realistic than some of the numbers that we've been seeing coming in terms of the cost estimate. And one thing that when you go back and you look at, I pulled a document that Excel had filed dating back to February of 2011, where they indicated that the cost per turbine, and they deem this a conservative estimate for decommissioning expense, is approximately $445,000 per turbine. So significantly higher. And I realize that for those who aren't self-bonded, this adds cost to the operation, but we want to make sure that we have enough money on hand when the day comes to decommission these facilities, that it can be done properly and effectively for the sake of the landowner and also the visual aspect of what's left behind when a facility is no longer useful. So I think we'll be busy taking a look at these numbers, but I agree with your your comment that this is a good, solid first step, and it keeps the process moving forward.
I'm glad you commented, Mr. Chairman, because there was one other thing I was going to point out on this first of the three. In this case, in the decommissioning plan, Exhibit A from the engineering company is a cost, they call it a cost breakdown. All these use different terminology, and then their cost breakdowns are broken down differently and make them very hard to follow. I've been in discussion with staff as we get this initial phase of having these facilities do decommissioning plans. I'll be working with staff to try and come up with guidance to them. And actually, one of the larger operators requested the same thing. They were actually wondering how we want these broke down, but so that we could see similarities in the breakdown and find where the big discrepancies lie and where we think that maybe they're lowballing too. So,
and one other point is you spearheaded the decommissioning effort, and when you're the first through the wall, so to speak, it's always the toughest, right?
We'll learn as we go, though.
But I think other states will definitely learn by this example as well. So.
Yep.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, now RC1. I move the commission approve the decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on September 30th, 2019, with revisions noted in the letter filed on October 2nd, 2019, in Rugby Wind LLC, Wind Energy Center, Pierce County, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-13-844.
Second.
So on September 30th, Avangrid Renewables filed its decommissioning plan and cost estimate for this Rugby Wind facility. The total decommissioning cost estimate is approximately $10.5 million or $147,000 per wind turbine generator. And in this case, there are 71 generators in this facility. At staff's direction, in the motion, I mentioned the revisions. At staff's direction, Avangrid corrected two errors to clarify that all access roads would be removed and any access road that would be abandoned as is would require commission approval. That's part of our rule. Avangrid is currently preparing a surety bond to comply with the commission's financial assurance as the facility will be operational for 10 years in December, actually this month, but it's coming up here, so they got a little time yet. Staff has reviewed Rugby Wind's decommissioning plan and cost estimate and find them reasonable and in compliance. Therefore, they recommend the commission approve.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And RC5, I move the commission approve the decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on October 31st of 2019, and further move the commission approve the parent guarantee filed on November 11th, 2019 in Emmons Logan Wind LLC, Emmons Logan Wind Energy Center, Emmons and Logan decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-19-179.
Second.
On October 31st, Emmons Logan Wind filed this decommissioning plan and cost estimate for the facility. Emmons Logan has a nameplate capacity of approximately 216 megawatts and consists of 102 turbines. The total amount to be decommissioned, excluding salvage value, is $13,891,000 or $136,180 per turbine. So this is the other extreme just among these three. Laverne are only 1.5 megawatt turbines, and that estimate is $222,000 per turbine. These are much larger, 2.1 megawatt turbines, and coming in at $136,000. Now, in fairness, one thing is the roads. Laverne would be bringing in cranes and stuff for far fewer turbines than this. So that's certainly one thing. But we'll learn as we go, as we talked about. Also on November 11th, Emmons Logan also filed a parent guarantee for the same amount. The guarantor, NextEra Energy Capital Holdings Incorporated, has an A-minus credit rating from Fitch Ratings, thereby meeting our guidelines for proposing a decommissioning parent guarantee. So staff has reviewed the decommissioning plan, the cost estimate, and the parent guarantee and find them to be reasonable and consistent with our administrative rules. And therefore, staff recommends that the commission approve.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right, thank you. In terms of announcements, our next commission meeting will be on Wednesday, December 18th at 10 o'clock here at the State Capitol, 12th floor. Also on that day, on December 18th, we have a periodic information exchange meeting with NSP. And then actually a few days earlier on Monday, December 16th and Tuesday, December 17th, beginning at 9 a.m. each day, we will have a formal hearing for Coyote Creek Mining Company. Those case numbers are RC19-189 and RC19-190. We'll now take a brief recess and questions from the press, followed by the administrative portion of the meeting. This meeting is now in recess.